And no problem tonight. That is deep to right field, and that is worth two. That'll get him in. And Mike Moustakas hits his 20th of the year.
Royals one offensive highlight. Okay, there was a couple, but that's the one we're going to use. Moustakas' 20th home run and back-to-back 20 home run seasons for Mike Moustakas, who is being looked at by some scouts in regards to perhaps a trade here before the trade deadline, which is July 31st, although you can still trade players if they clear waivers after the 31st, so it's kind of a misnomer when you say the deadline to trade. You can trade guys after the deadline because there's another deadline, so it's kind of like, you know, you get an extension. You got a deadline for taxes, but you can get an extension, so that's a different deadline. It's something like that. So the Royals do win. Salvador Perez with a home run as well. He had three hits. But the story was Birch Smith, another good start for the Royals starting pitcher. Birch Smith, 6 1/3, gives up just a run, actually two runs on just one hit. And he threw about 85 pitches, and he gets his first win in the big league since 2013.
Just really excited, you know, we were able to get ahead and throw strikes and just have a good outing. But this one feels good. I felt pretty good early on, and I knew that me and Sal had a great plan going in. If we just stick to that and able to execute, then we'll be in a good spot. I was actually thinking about it. That's the most pitches I've thrown in about probably five years. Yeah. So I was pretty tired, but felt good though.
Smith walked back-to-back hitters in the seventh, got pulled, got a nice ovation from the crowd. Left-hander Tim Hill came in and gave up a three-run homer, and you thought, oh, the Royals bullpen's going to blow it again. But they didn't, thankfully, because Brandon Mara was not put into the game. That's why they won. Willie Peralta was available after having to sit a night out because of pitching three straight games. He picks up his fifth save. He's done a pretty good job in the closer's role, and the Royals win. 31-69 is now the record, and they'll wrap up their series with Detroit, the rubber match. Yeah, they should be a sweep of the Tigers, really. Should have won the other night, as we said. Danny Duffy to the hill. His ERA all the way down to 4.40. That tells you how good he's been lately. 6-8 on the season. He'll start at 1:15 this afternoon at Kauffman Stadium against the Tigers' Matthew Boyd. So the Royals winning last night 5-4. Danny Duffy, speaking of him, Danny Duffy has caught some criticism on Twitter, and I just don't know what's wrong with people. Are Royals fans wanting Danny Duffy to leave town? A few weeks ago, Duffy responded to Twitter backfire over his choice to take long walks, sometimes even walking from downtown Kansas City to Kauffman Stadium. What can an athlete or a celeb or a person possibly do to please people? He's walking, so he's not polluting the environment. He's walking at his own danger in regards to walking in downtown Kansas City to Kauffman, so he was considered a mental case. That's what some people put. Are you serious? You're a mental case for putting on Twitter that somebody's a mental case, people. And so now he changed his Twitter handle. Last week he changed it. All of a sudden people are like, oh, he wants out of Kansas City. He changed his Twitter handle. He wants out of Kansas City. Duffy said, I think they freaked themselves out. I didn't do anything. I just wanted that Twitter handle. And that's what happened. People do anything they can to find something to talk about. I've made it pretty clear where I want to be, and that's here in Kansas City, so I don't think I need to say anything else. End of quote. You are right, Danny. You don't need to say a word because these fans are bumbleheads, okay? That is just to give you a static, Danny, because you didn't take the car to work is ridiculous. Is it normal for somebody to walk all the way from downtown KC to Kauffman Stadium? Probably not, but then again, who defines normal? It's Danny Duffy's life. He's not breaking any laws. He's not, you know, he's not going down the street and hitting people with baseball bats behind the knees or throwing baseballs at their heads. You know what I'm saying? He's just minding his own business, and I find it refreshing that he would do something like that. But these knuckleheads on Twitter, these people have no life whatsoever, need to get one and quit worrying about whether a guy walked from downtown Keys to the Kauffman Stadium. And even if he is a mental case, why the bleep should you care? If he goes out and pitches every 5 days and pitches good for your team, isn't that all you care about? Yeah, it's ridiculous. He's been pitching great. He can walk across the entire state of Missouri to go pitch against the Cardinals if he wants to do that. And if he pitches well, I'm okay with it. And if he doesn't, well, that's for the Royals to figure it out, not Danny Duffy to be yelled at by some knuckleheads.
Right, and he wants out of Kansas City because he changed his Twitter handle?
Apparently.
What did he change it to? D. Duffy,
it's
Boston,
Duff
or
Man.
Bust, or
it's
what?
Duff Man instead of Duff KC 41.
I thought maybe it was like Boston or Bust or double D to NYC or something like that.
Yeah. I will say if his Twitter handle changed from Duff KC 41 to Screw You KC, I think you could go ahead and connect the dots and say, yeah, he might want to get out of KC. I hate KC. The Royals suck. You know, Duff at right. Royals suck, you know, whatever. But no, it's just he went from Duff KC 41 to Duff Man. Oh, you want out of Kansas City. What's up with this? Yeah, that's why he walked. He wants to get out of Kansas City so badly, he walked from downtown. No, you would run. You would get the fastest car and get out of Dodge and go east, west, north, or south if you wanted out that badly. Yeah. What's wrong
he couldn't
with
get
people.
Out of his contract that quick, so that was his form of protest, was walking to
was
work.
Was walking from downtown KC.
And it garnered just the attention he was hoping for.
Yeah, I'm sure he walked to the game in his jersey, right, to draw attention to himself? Come on, people. Come on.
From my one experience being right next to Danny Duffy before he went and pitched a game, he looked like a regular person.
Like
I said, most people didn't even know who he was. So.
Honestly, most athletes are regular people.
Yeah.
Actually, they all are regular people, Dusty.
Like, what I'm saying is, in Kauffman Stadium, he looked like us, what I'm saying.
Right. It looked like he belonged in the stands instead of on the field.
With, with a backpack and a beard and walking down the steps, if you didn't know who he was, you wouldn't have known. Anything that he was a pitcher.
But really, in baseball, most guys fit that.
Like, oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, football is different because you see this huge, big guy, and you might think, oh, he's a football player. No, he's just a fan. But you go, that guy's got to be a big offensive lineman. Now, basketball, there's a 6'10 guy. He must be a basketball player. He might not be.
Yeah.
But if he is, he stands out. So it's a little bit different sport to sport. All right, local sports, we've got some schedule changes, time changes for K18 today, right?
Yeah, state tournament will finish today. Originally scheduled to be at 5:30, but the consolation game will start at 3 o'clock this afternoon at Lucas between Wakanda and Ellis. So, again, that's 3 o'clock in Lucas for the third-place consolation game, and the championship game will be following that between Concordia CNB and Concordia F&A. So that's what's going on today. Again, Wakanda Ellis at 3 o'clock this afternoon. All the results so far can be found at ncksports.com, and today's the last day for our area teams competing in summer baseball. So best luck to Wakanda as they go for third place here this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
All right, absolutely. Best of luck to them. I joked earlier, they're going against Ellis, and I never cheer for Ellis. Unless I have a relation that's going to be playing for Ellis now that my sister's a trader and now works for Ellis.
Here's the thing. My nephew plays for the Ellis
team. That's right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I said earlier, who cares about Ellis, so.
But here's the thing.
You do, but I don't.
Here's the thing. He doesn't live in Ellis during the school year,
right.
So he doesn't really play a lot because the coach is a high school coach. He's trying to develop his team for high school. So I get off from cheering for him because he's not playing a whole lot. So that's my rationale. Like,
okay.
You got Wakanda, you can beat Ellis today, and it won't hurt my feelings.
That's good. Wakanda, you have Dusty's permission to beat the living tar out of Ellis. Speaking of tar, do you know what today is?
Was
that today?
Pine Tar.
It's the anniversary of the Pine Tar game. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
We're talking 35-year anniversary. That's crazy. 35 years ago. George Brett's a Hall of Famer. More than 3,000 career hits. I think of him as a terrific player. The first thing that pops in my head with George Brett is not the Pine Tar thing for me. George Brett was kind of my role model growing up. I loved him as a baseball player. One of my favorite players of all time. My images of Brett is, grabbing Sabre Hagen when they won the 85 World Series and hitting three home runs in an American League playoff game and just knowing he's clutch. But for a lot of people that just know George Brett, maybe weren't a diehard Royals fan, and maybe if you are a diehard Royals fan, the one thing you remember right off the bat is the Pine Tar game when George looked like a crazy person.
A man possessed,
yes, the devil inner child of him. But he has the MVP award, World Series ring, 3,000 hits, 3,154 to be exact. He had one of the highest votes to get into the Hall of Fame, highest percentages. And despite all of that, still, he's considered for many, when they think of George Brett, they think of the Pine Tar game back on July 24th of 1983, which was technically yesterday, was the anniversary of that. if you don't remember the story, the Royals were trailing the Yankees 4-3 at Yankee Stadium when George Brett came to the plate with one on and two out in the top of the ninth inning. Now, let me preface this by saying the Yankees and Royals didn't like each other. They hated each other. And the Yankees stood in the way of the Royals so many times when they were so good, and the Royals finally broke through in 1980. The home run that George hit in the top of the ninth inning was off of Yankees reliever Goose Gossage. It put the Royals up 5-4, or so it seemed. Yankees manager Billy Martin, who was never one to pull any shenanigans, right? Billy Martin got a peek at Brett's bat and saw more pine tar than he thought permissible, so he asked the umpires to take a look to figure out if the bat had more than allowed 18 inches of pine tar. After some discussions and measurements, they concluded the bat was in violation of Rule 1.10C and called George Brett out. That rule, now cited as Rule 3.02C, in the 2018 rule book, states the bat handle for not more than 18 inches from its end may be covered or treated with any material or substance to improve the grip. So the rule has changed. But the rule back in 83, there was a limit to it. Of course, George Brett wasn't very happy with the umpire's ruling. He goes ballistic. He comes out and looks like he's going to kill everybody on the field. And Brett, of course, was ejected from the game. Now, here's what some people may not know about the pine tar game. While all of this was going on around home plate, Royals pitcher Gaylord Perry, the Perrys didn't cheat at all, right?
Yeah.
Tried to run off with the evidence. Brett's bat was what he was trying to run off with, but was apprehended by a guard before he could tamper with it. Perry was also ejected, and with Brett called out, the Royals lost. After the game, though, Kansas City filed a protest with the American League, which ruled that although Brett did break the rules, the home run should have been allowed to stand. So on August 18th, the two teams returned to Yankee Stadium to resume play, except Brett and Perry and manager Dick Houser, is ejected as well, weren't allowed to come back for the rest of the game. And they resumed the game with the Royals leading 5-4 with two outs in the top of the ninth inning. Billy Martin, still angry about the incident, tried to reveal the resumed game for the farce he believed it to be by stationing pitcher Ron Guidry, who played center field. He put left-handed first baseman Don Mattingly at second. And before Yankees pitcher George Frazier threw the first pitch, he threw the ball to first, then the second, to dispute that Brett had not touched those bases on his home run. Based on the fact there were different umpires on the field for the game's resumption who couldn't possibly know whether Brett touched all the bases anyway. When the umpires upheld the home run, Martin went out to protest, only to be surprised when the crew produced notarized affidavits from the original umpires stating that Brett had touched all the bases.
Covering your bases, speaking of.
Yeah. So after the initial craziness, the final four outs of the game were recorded in order and the Royals won 5-4. Though the incident probably wasn't the sort of legacy-defining moment Brett envisioned as a kid, he has since come to see it as a pretty good one nonetheless. He says, and I quote, "It was a positive thing, you know. It wasn't a ground ball that went through my legs or a strikeout. I hit a home run off of one of the toughest relief pitchers in all of baseball." So that's a good take on it. I like that, Brett's take. And we had Greg Pryor on a couple years ago. Greg Pryor was the backup third baseman to George Brett. And he was always in the dugout. But for that particular game, he was a bullpen catcher or an emergency catcher. For some reason, he had to be in the bullpen. And so he saw this from afar in the bullpen. And then his locker, he was number four. George Brett was number five. And so after the game, Greg Pryor couldn't even get to his locker, basically, because all the media wanted to talk to Brett, which was, of course, right next to Pryor's locker. So Greg Pryor was the guy nobody noticed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so his story was interesting, sharing what happened. And he said, "Wouldn't that be something? The only game in my whole major league career I was in the bullpen was the pine tar game." Mm-hmm. And then I was the guy right next to George Brett. And Brett was calmed down, he said, and was kind of laughing about it after the game and answered questions. And I remember Greg Pryor's story, he said something about, "You're going to be famous now, or you're famous for this for the rest of your life." I mean, they knew at the time this is something very unique and very rare what happened. But just the video of Brett coming out of that dugout is just, I mean, you just, if you haven't ever seen it, if you're a Royals fan, you've seen it. But if you haven't, that's just, I mean, you talk about a madman. That's where the guy just lost his mind. Well, and, you know, honestly, rightfully so, not, you know, to try to kill anybody, he didn't, but you can understand him being so upset because he hated the Yankees, and Billy Martin sometimes pulled things like this, And so, and it was a home run taken away that gave the Royals a lead. There were so many reasons why Brett was upset.
Yeah.
You know? So, well, technically, though, the rule was broken. What's interesting is that usually when you file an appeal or protest a game, it's never, hardly ever granted.
No. Yeah.
So that's what was weird about this situation is that Major League Baseball went ahead and granted it, allowed the home run to stand, and then they had to come back and play four outs. Yeah. That just doesn't happen.
Well, no. And see, a little bit.
National news, top of the national news. I remember it in 83. It was national news.
Man. It was a huge deal. Yeah, it was a huge deal. Now, see, I've talked about this a couple of times before, but another little inkling on the story as far as Billy Martin goes. Billy Martin played baseball in the Army when he was serving in the military, and he played shortstop, and my granddad from Cortland played second base, and him and Billy became good friends. Billy used to bring guys to Cortland and hunt and this, that, and the other thing. Martin claims that they had noticed this and seen this in the past and knew that Brett's right. bat was out of the rules.
But they waited.
And was just
they
waiting.
They waited for him to
waiting,
hit a home run or do something
Was waiting
special.
For something that hurt
right.
them
Absolutely.
In order to point it out. But that's something that Martin had been sitting on for some period of time.
Sure.
Knew it was online, was just waiting for it to come up in a situation where Brett hurt them and then bring it up. And well, they said that that's what probably made him as mad as anything.
Well, but why would he bring it up if Brett struck out?
I mean, right, exactly.
You know, why you know, we talk about this the other day. You know, why do people bring up all this well, the Josh Hader situation. Why did people wait till the day before the All-Star game to reveal that he had tweets that were racist and offensive when they could have done it any time in the last 6 years?
Right.
And it's because they want to hurt that person. Billy Martin wanted to make a statement. And honestly, he probably didn't. He respected Brett, but probably hated Brett as well as a competitor mm-hmm. because Brett hit lots of home runs off of Goose and the Yankees. So this is his chance to get back at
yeah,
him.
Yeah, you're just sitting on it, just yeah. waiting for yeah. it to be advantageous
like
to him.
Like political blackmail. You don't show it 6 months before somebody runs. You usually wait the night before the election, right?
Right.
Or sometime near.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, Billy Martin's no different than anybody else from that standpoint. But we know Billy was in the shenanigans. There's yeah. no question yeah. about that. I mean, he got thrown out how many times of games and ejected and did everything, you know, and had his little circus. And then, of course, he got hired and fired, what, 5-6 times by the Yankees, which is insane.
Several.
That itself was a circus. But technically, based on the rule at that time, that was a rule that was broken. But for some reason, Major League Baseball decided to allow it to stand. And I don't, you know, it's interesting. It's just interesting piece of history of Major League Baseball and something that Brett will be remembered for the rest of his life, 100 years after he dies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We talk about how one moment can define you. Sometimes it can. That happens.
Yeah. Well, for me, George Brett was the same as what you said mm-hmm. when you prefaced all this. Mm-hmm. It's like, this happened a month before I was born. So that's not how I remember George Brett until I got older and understood this actually happened, and then you see the video of it. And things like that. You remember George Brett is best baseball player that's played for the Royals, you know, mm-hmm. and a guy that you loved growing up. And you know, if you're playing out in the field, just hitting the ball around, you were George Brett, you know, and that's what you remember. That's what I remember. But like I say, this happened a little bit before I was born, and I wouldn't have even known about it. Most stuff that happened at that time, you know,
right.
But since it was such a big deal, you know, it's ingrained in your mind, even though you weren't even around to see it when it happened live or hear the top of the news talking about it when it happened. So it's definitely one of those gigantic things that obviously lives on in time.
It's interesting. Here's a little bit more background of that story. I didn't realize this part. Tim McClellan, I knew he was the one that threw out Brett and mm-hmm. called him out. That was his first year as an American League umpire. So he was 31, and it says here this story is interesting. As Tim McClellan, who threw out Brett and called Brett out for violating the pine tar rule, as Tim McClellan walked towards his gate at LaGuardia International Airport the evening of after that game, the first-year AL umpire had to pass through a gauntlet of Kansas City Royals players glaring at him. McClellan said, "It was the proverbial, if looks could kill, I'd be dead in a heartbeat look." And so... there you have it. I mean, that's just right there. He had to deal with the players. I'm trying to read a little bit more here. And the other thing to add to this was in July, late July. Both teams entered that afternoon two games out of first place in their division. So it was a very important game. It wasn't like one team was really struggling, the other team was having a great year. And it could have had an enormous impact on the playoff picture that October based on McClellan's ruling. And, of course, we know Brett came out and went nuts and this and that. But here's a little bit more background to what Chad was saying. The seeds of the great controversy were actually sown 2 weeks earlier when Yankees third baseman Craig Nettles, of course, Brett and him got into a fight once in a game, Nettles noticed excessive pine tar on Brett's bat during a game in Kansas City. The word was passed on to Billy Martin, who decided to save that tip for the most opportune occasion, as we just discussed. It didn't remain tucked away in Martin's memory bank for long, because less than 2 weeks later, with the Yankees leading 4-3, two outs, top of the ninth, that's when George hit his home run, and Billy decided, all right, this is the time to bust this thing out. And they took the bat, and they put it there along home plate 17 inches wide, and the 18 inches was the limit on the pine tar. And the end, I still think the funny part of the story, one of the funny parts of the story, is Gaylord Perry trying to walk off with the evidence.
Right.
And a guard apprehended it. That just cracks me up.
What I don't understand about it is, yeah, I understand that the pine tar is supposed to improve your grip, but what does, whether your hands are only so wide.
I don't know how it really helps that. You hit a home run other than holding onto the bat, which somebody could argue, well, that helps you hit a home run because you hold on the bat. Right. A little bit more. But
who puts their hands together at the base of a bat and your two fists together are more than 18 inches?
Yeah.
How does that help you if there's pine tar up above where your hands even are on the bat? How is that supposed to be beneficial to you?
Well, it just helps you grip the bat. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, if he chokes up,
the point is if it's legal to put it where you're choking
right.
And where you're holding it, then what does it mean after
that? But then why would Brett have to go 18 inches on the bat with the pine tar is the counter argument.
Yeah.
If his hands aren't that high anyway, then why does he put it that far up? Obviously, he does it for a reason.
I'm curious, guys.
Obviously, he did it for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, he did it for a reason. I mean, why would he pine tar 18 inches and, I mean, why would he put it that high if he didn't even need to use his hands in that area? Obviously, he did at some point, and so he put it up that high. You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't put it up that high if he didn't need it that high. I mean, he didn't put it across the whole bat.
Yeah, I just don't understand why, number one, you would need that number one, and number two,
why
it
needed
would be
to grip
a little
bit.
Who grabs the, I mean, hell, you got a 30-inch bat, you know, say, or a 31, 32-inch bat. Who's holding it halfway up on the, nobody's choking up that high. I just never understood that.
Well, you'd have to ask George Brett that question.
Yeah.
I don't know why he put that much pine tar on there, or if he really needed that much pine tar.
And like I said, why is there even a rule about it?
I'm guessing he didn't put as much on after that happened.
Yeah.
You know, I'm guessing. And by the way, he barely, it wasn't like it was way over the limit either, but technically it was.
Yeah.
So why did American League, why did American League President Lee McPhail and not Tim McClellan have the final say? While the Royals protested, 4 days later, McPhail issued the peculiar statement that while the umpires were technically correct, Brett's bat did not violate the spirit of the rules. McPhail went on to point out that the intent of the rule was to discipline batters using a doctored bat to increase distance potential, but not to treat pine tar excesses in the same manner. And McClellan says, that's where I had a little bit of a problem. We don't umpire on the spirit of the rules. We umpire on the letter of the law, and the rules said that we needed to call him out. If I would have turned to Billy Martin and said, Billy, you know, you're right by the rules, but come on, he just hit a home run in the ninth inning, and it's not in the spirit of the rules, Billy Martin would have protested, and we would have lost that protest. I'll probably be the first one to admit that it wasn't a good rule, but we can't rule on the good ones and not rule on the bad ones. So McPhail restored the home run, so forth and so on, and this and that, and the possibility of a second such incident was eliminated that very next winter when Major League Baseball changed the rule to read, if the umpire discovers that the bat does not conform to the pine tar rule until a time during or after which the bat has been used in play, it shall not be grounds for declaring the batter out or ejected from the game. Jim Brinkman, who was also on that umpiring crew, says there's no penalty anymore, so you can do whatever you want to do. You can use a bat with pine tar all the way to the end if you want. So you're allowed to do that now. There's no limit. You can sprinkle that thing with pine tar all the way from the handle all the way to the other end of the bat. You're allowed to do all of that. And it is, I will say this, I'm a Royals fan, and I'm glad that they reinstituted the home run. I'm glad the Royals won the game, and I can't stand the Yankees, and that's great and all. But if I want to be objective about this, and we were talking about objectivity the other day in sports, so here's a situation where a Yankee fan listening going, well, there's no question the umpires got it right and the Royals are wrong. And a Royals fan is going, well, I wasn't even born then, but I guarantee you the Royals had it right and they got it all right. And how could they not get it right? Because the AL president ruled that that's the way it was going to be. But if you're objective and you look at this thing, Tim McClellan, McClellan is absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were talking about the intentional walk the other day, not to bring up a sore subject or anything, but for instance, if there was a rule that said you can't intentionally walk anybody, and then the umpire says, well, you know, it's within the spirit of the rules. We'll let it go this time. Well, then why do you have a rule? And that's exactly what Tim McClellan's saying. If you get, it's kind of like an NFL official. The rule that I can't stand, we talked about the other day, is when you go to the pylon, you fumble the ball out of bounds. And then the team's like waiting for the ruling, and the referee goes, well, you know, technically, by rule, that should be your ball at the 20-yard line. Mm-hmm. But come on, man. Seriously, that was just a great effort. It's not really within the spirit of the rules. Well, then what's the point of having rules? So I would agree with Tim McClellan. If you're going to overrule us when we got the rule right, you should overrule us when we get it wrong.
Yeah.
Our job is not to make up the rules as officials or umpires. Our job is to enforce the rules because that's our job. Now, Todd Titchener's told us that before, too, Major League Baseball umpire. So it was a very odd situation where you basically say, Brett violated the rule, but it's in the spirit of the game, we're going to let it stand. Obviously, Yankee fans still to this day don't like that.
And I found the answer to my question.
Did you? Good. I'm glad you could answer your own question.
I did, since you guys were no help.
Yeah, well, I wasn't there.
The reason, according to Major League Baseball, that it's illegal above 18 inches on the barrel of the bat is because the stickiness of the pine tar could cause the bat to be in contact with the ball for just a tiny instant longer, which could result in additional spin or force impacted on the ball. If you're a hitter, that extra spin on well-hit balls could cause them to rise and travel farther. The extra top spin on a well-hit line drive causes them to fall to the ground, and a spinning ball near the lines is more likely to spin foul, but all in all, a spinning ball is more likely to result in a base hit or a home run.
Which used to be the rule. Obviously, they're not worried about that anymore because they got rid of it that winter. So it was a rule that they thought was enough
but
to
that
put
was
in
the
force.
Reason.
But then as soon as there was a big controversy like that, they decided to pull the plug on the rule, which probably was the right thing to do, I would imagine. So I would agree. I think it's a silly rule. I don't think there was a big advantage that George Brett did just fine after that game, by the way. He had three home runs in a playoff game, and the Royals won the World Series in 85. So a couple years later, it's safe to say Brett didn't have to break the rules in order to be successful. And I don't think you'd accuse George Brett of taking steroids or performance-enhancing drugs either. So it does seem like a silly rule. But like Tim McClellan said, no matter how silly it was, we just went ahead and enacted the rules. That's what we're supposed to do. And then we were overruled by the president of American League saying, well, in the spirit of the game, let's just let that home run stand. I mean, come on, we can't take it away. Can you imagine if the rules had been reversed and the Yankees did that to the Royals? Royals fans would be upset about this to this day, too, in fairness, to be objective.
Yeah.
So... interesting. We've kind of been talking about rules and everything this week, and there's one from 35 years ago that was a rule, but American League president basically said, ignore the rule. And the Yankees didn't.
And then Major League Baseball as a whole decided to ignore the rule and not even count it anymore.
They didn't ignore the rule. They got rid of the rule.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Interesting story, or interesting what this happened. Another night, another near no-hitter. Austin Gomber's no-hit bid, though, was interrupted by a fire alarm. Huh? Well, the Cardinals on Monday had a rookie pitcher take a no-hitter deep into his start. We talked about that yesterday. And now it was another pitcher, Austin Gomber of the Cardinals, second straight night, where they had a no-hitter going through six innings. And what would have messed him up? A fire alarm went off at the stadium in Cincinnati, caused a seven-minute delay, so that breaks up your rhythm. If you're in a pretty good rhythm as a player in any sport, that's very important to you. And if that messes, that's why when in baseball, when a pitcher's trying to quick pitch you, and we had some kids try to do that this year, or they get in a really good rhythm, we tell our kids, step out of the box, take a little more time, look at me for the sign, okay? And so then I'll take a little bit longer to give the sign, and thus that pitcher's got to wait until the batter's in the box to pitch, maybe breaking up his rhythm. Now somebody listening to that goes, well, that's not cool. It's within the rules.
That's unethical.
It's within the rules. It's within the rules. Now,
no, it's perfectly fine.
Because the ump is in control of it. If the ump is going to allow you to take a lot of time, between pitches and go over your signals with your batter, then the pitcher is going to get out of a rhythm more than likely. Now, if he's a really good pitcher, he can still throw strikes and that won't matter. But some kids get into a rhythm. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those little nuances of baseball that you can do. Another nuance, and I'll admit, I did it this year, and it's not cheating at all, is that we had a situation where a kid got hit on his finger. All right? He had his finger around the bat, and the ball hit his finger, so he was in a little bit of pain. So he comes up to me, and I said, hey, are you okay? He goes, yeah, I'm fine. I said, relax. I said, are you sure you're okay? And I was buying time, okay, buying a little bit of time because we had a couple other kids come over checking, and we actually talked a little strategy while I'm like, hey, are you, your fingers all right? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I think it's okay. All right, well, just make sure. By the way, we got runners at first and second and sure. Plays at third. Yeah. Just a little thing like that. And that's not breaking any rules because it's not like, hey, you're not allowed to talk about anything else other than the kid's finger that got hit. There's no rule that exists because of that. And this happens all the time in sports. We see it in the NBA. They're both teams are out of timeouts and a guy fouls out and they all go over to the side, have another timeout. Or there's instant replay and they've taken 5 minutes to figure it out at any sport and the guys get together and talk strategy. Wait a minute, you didn't have any timeouts. Why are you allowed to do that? Because the officials allow you to do that. But really, honestly, should you be allowed to have a free timeout and go over all your strategy? I mean, technically both teams are allowed to, so it's fair. So it's kind of interesting when you look at rules in any sport. And so then there are things that happen that you can kind of try to disrupt people's timing, as I talked about. And people did it to our kids too, by the way. It wasn't just us. But then there's situations that aren't even done by the other team. Or was it? Maybe the Reds did pull the fire alarm to mess up this guy. Maybe that's what they did. I don't know if there's a rule that says you can't pull the fire alarm during the middle of a no-hitter. I don't know why it went off. I don't know if somebody did it on purpose, this or that. Weird time for a fire drill in the middle of a Major League Baseball game. But the fire alarm went off. So some people think, well, that caused some problems for the pitcher, Gomber. And then guess what happened? Next batter, Joey Votto, who's a really good hitter. Base hit, no hitter, gone. So people today, well, what if that fire alarm and that 7-minute delay didn't happen? He might have thrown a no hitter. Might have, would have, could have, should have, whatever, you know. Bug could have flown into his eye and messed him up and threw off his timing. I mean, it is what it is, man. It is what it is. But it's not like you see this every day. A fire alarm goes off causing a 7-minute delay, and it came at a really bad time for a guy that was trying to do something special. And only he could tell you if that threw him off. And I would be willing to bet you, because we've had kids try to get in a rhythm and pitch, and then people disrupt our rhythm, that they'll tell you, oh, that I kind of got out of rhythm. I was really dealing. I think this guy would probably tell you the same thing. I mean, it's not something you're used to.
Well, when you're that deep in the game, too, like if it happened in the third inning or something like that, he could use the excuse, well, I wasn't into it yet. I wasn't into my groove, and that happens. But,
right.
I mean, I would be pretty mad if I was a Cardinals player or fan or whatever, and especially the pitcher, if that happens.
Right.
And
right.
That deep in the game, in the sixth inning, you know, you run six innings of no-hit ball, and now this happens. Like, I'm on a roll right now. What are you doing? Like, who pulled that?
Here it is. That went on for at least 30 seconds there. That caused a 7-minute delay. Maybe it went on for 7 minutes. I'm not sure. Mm. But I mean, first of all, that's annoying, the sound.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
And the other thing is, lost in this whole discussion, is if you're a fan of the ballpark, oh, my God, there's a fire at the ballpark. What do I do? Where do I go? How do I handle this? It was a false alarm. I don't know why it went off, but it went off when the guy had a no-hitter and probably messed him up. You know, is the pitcher today, you know, screaming bloody murder that happened to him? He's not. He's probably inside burning up.
Yeah.
But out loud, he's probably, you know, I could bellyache about it all I want, but it's not gonna change the fact that Joey Votto got a base hit off of him later, and that's just things that you can't control sometimes in sports. And you know what? You're gonna have to deal with adversity. You know, one of the things I think we haven't really discussed much about sports in general this week is Because we've talked about instances where people talk about this rule sucks and this rule stinks and this is fair and this isn't fair. You know what? You know, life isn't fair and there's things that stink and we all complain. We all whine and complain about this or that, or we like this rule, we don't like this rule. We like this team, we don't like this team. Our interpretation of this call by an ump, the other interpretation. But one of the things we try to tell our team this year, and it applies to every sport, and really honestly applies to anything you do in life, and that is things aren't always going to go your way. How you address and handle when things go against you is going to define you more than when things are going great. It's called adversity. Adversity. If you can overcome adversity, that's going to make you a stronger person. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, without question.
When, if you're given the golden spoon and you didn't have to work for anything in your life and you didn't have to deal with any issues or how to overcome any obstacles, you're probably not going to appreciate things as much and you're probably not going to be as good of a person because of it. But if you got to deal with some tough times, some adversity, whether you know something went wrong against you in a football game, basketball game, baseball game, like this fire alarm situation, or maybe something went wrong in life where you unjustifiably got fired from a job or you didn't do what they said you did and just because of allegations you were gone and you never let the court system play its due process to find out if you're innocent until proven guilty instead of guilty proven until innocent. I mean, all these things, you got adversity to deal with. You know, you lose a loved one, you got to overcome that. Or you had an injury and you broke your hand in sports and now that's adversity. You know, you got to deal with healing up so the next time eventually you can play a different sport if you get older. Adversity, you know, you're playing a pickup game at the age of 40 in basketball and you tear rupture your Achilles. I mean, that's adversity. You got to overcome that. Adversity sometimes at work. I mean, it can happen where you've got all these things you got to get to and you don't have enough time to get to it. Well, you got to either find time, make time, or be creative or eventually get to it. It makes you stronger. Adversity in life makes you stronger. And if there was no adversity in life, whether it be in sports or anything else, things would be pretty doggone easy. It's not supposed to be super easy. I know we'd all like it to be super easy, right? That would be preferable, but it's not. So here's a guy, a no-hitter. Now, I don't think this is going to happen again, but the next time there's a fire alarm, he'll be better suited to handle it.
Yeah.
You know, or if there's a delay in a game, he's going to be better suited to handle it next time. Because sometimes these things you get better with experience, and you have to deal with adversity. If in sports, you lose, you're not going to win every single game. You lose a game, how do you handle losing? You know, are you a class act when you lose, or are you just a bad sport? If you win, are you a good sport, or do you rub it in the other team's face? You can be a good winner and a good loser, but there are a lot of times you see great winners and poor losers. And there's times where you got great people that handle losing maybe better than they handle winning. It's weird, but sometimes that happens. So how you handle yourself when you deal with adversity is very important in life and can make you and others around you stronger because of it. All right, Major League Baseball trades. The Yankees do get richer. They trade, and this is legal. See, this is another thing that, you know, is one of those things where people that don't like the Yankees are like, oh, God, Yankees got it. They got another pitcher for their bullpen. They already have a great bullpen. Why do they need another pitcher? The other team was willing to trade that guy to the Yankees. Any other team could have traded for Zach Britton. Correct?
Yes.
So people screaming at the Yankees.
They had the opportunity to do that.
So people upset today that the Yankees got richer because they acquired an all-star left-handed relief pitcher in Zach Britton. Every other team in baseball had the opportunity to make a better offer in a trade. And this must have been clearly the best deal for the Orioles because they traded within their division, and usually you don't do that.
Yeah.
That's usually a big no-no. The Yankees acquired left-hand pitcher Zach Britton from the Baltimore Orioles in exchange for Dylan Tate, a pitcher, Cody Carroll, a pitcher, and another pitcher, Josh Rogers. Britton has only appeared in 16 games due to, oddly enough, Achilles injury. So there's adversity for the guy. He's posted an ERA at 3.45, really good strikeout-to-walk ratio. So we'll see what happens with that trade, how it turns out. I don't know how great these prospects are that the Yankees gave up, but they're all pitchers, and we know that every team needs pitching. Mike Moustakas may be traded. Don't be shocked if he goes to the Yankees. It's possible. He play first or third or be a DH. It's possible he'd go there. I don't think he will, but it's possible. All right, NFL football. Todd Gurley gets a big contract with the Los Angeles Rams. $45 million in guaranteed money, and it's a four-year, $60 million contract extension. $45 million guaranteed, so $15 million the Rams could maybe cut bait on in a year or two or whenever if they want to cut bait with Todd Gurley. Le'Veon Bell has been saying, see, people, you thought I was tripping. Le'Veon Bell wants, what is it, $17 million a year from the Steelers? Here's the problem with Le'Veon Bell's comment. He's right that the overall amount of money, Bell wants a lot of money too, and he's probably deserving of it based on Gurley's a great player, young player. Bell has a longer track record, but he's an older player. But when you really look at it, when you figure in how the money is structured and everything else, it's a $12 million a year deal. On average, yeah. Todd Gurley's going to make $12 million a year. Le'Veon Bell is asking for $17. So Le'Veon Bell would say, see, I wasn't crazy. You all tripping that I'm asking for this much money. It's not out of reason. Well, per year, it kind of is. Because, now, granted, if you're Le'Veon Bell, you might say, the Steelers, so far, their offer was only $10 million in guaranteed money. Now, if I'm Le'Veon Bell, if Todd Gurley gets $45 million in guaranteed money, I'm telling the Steelers, you know what? I'll take less per year. That's fine. But I want $45 million guaranteed up front because I'm just as good as Todd Gurley. That would be my agent talking. And it'd be a fair point. But whether the Steelers want to do that, I don't know, because he is an older running back than Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
But all in all, when you're looking at this isn't really apples to apples in regards to the average value of the contract per year, because Gurley's going to make about 12 when you figure in his current salary into this extension, whereas Le'Veon Bell's wanting 17. That's a $5 million a year difference. To me, NFL contracts, you really shouldn't be worried about the per year situation anymore. And I don't know if that's what Le'Veon Bell's caught up in. You got to worry about what you're going to get guaranteed up front, the signing bonus or whatever, guaranteed money up front. $45 million guaranteed for Le'Veon Bell. Or excuse me, Todd Gurley. Le'Veon Bell has only been offered $10 million guaranteed. If you're Le'Veon Bell, you're not even close to signing a deal.
No.
And I don't blame him.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I mean, if that's what you're getting, like you said, they'll understand that the Rams are investing in a 23-year-old.
Right. Le'Veon Bell is older than 23. I'm trying to see
I would say he's probably around 30. I don't know.
Well, that's when running backs run down. Yeah. He's 26.
Oh, so I didn't realize he was still that young.
So he's still got maybe 3-4 years left in his prime.
But, yeah, I mean, you're still – Todd Gurley definitely doesn't have the wear and tear that Le'Veon Bell does over the last few years because he's younger. So you're gonna give him that kind of contract, and the Steelers aren't gonna be giving that kind of money to a guy that's taken the beating that he has over the last few years. And also a guy that has been suspended. You know, can we go back to the track record of Le'Veon Bell as well? Because he's missed games for the Steelers that he should have been playing in because he's broken rules. And so why would you invest that kind of money in a guy that's older, that's taking the beating?
Two suspensions.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not just once. It's twice. That
he's had two
suspended.
Knee injuries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Injuries, suspensions. I mean, why are you going to give him more than Todd Gurley? I wouldn't.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, and the Steelers have always been known to have a pretty good offensive line, too. So how much does it matter who's back there, you know? Maybe somebody else could do the same things that he's doing. I think people get lost in some of the numbers sometimes for running backs. And you can look in the history of the NFL and look at systems where it doesn't matter who's back there. They're getting what they need as a team. And so you're not going to overextend yourself. I'm not if I'm ownership and leadership for the Steelers overextend myself to get Le'Veon Bell back.
Here's the comparison here. Bell is 26 and has injuries in his career, serious injuries, a couple knee injuries, suspended a couple times, as you mentioned. Todd Gurley is 23. And last year, Todd Gurley ran for more yards than Le'Veon Bell did on fewer carries. He scored more touchdowns than Le'Veon Bell on the ground and through the air. Gurley's a good receiving running back, so is Bell. He also recorded more receiving yards off of fewer catches. And it should that scenario repeat itself this season, convincing teams that Bell is worth more than Gurley will not be a straightforward task for Bell and his agent. And here's the other thing this article points out. With multiple teams competing for his services, it's not hard to believe that the demand for Bell's signature will drive up the price. But it is hard to imagine it will reach the $17 million level he's wanting. Gurley will earn a total, and here's why people overreact to contracts like Le'Veon Bell has. Gurley will earn a total of almost $72 million over the next 6 years from the Rams. When you include the money he was already due to earn over the next two seasons, Bell, meanwhile, was just offered $70 million over five. And Bell turned it down.
Yeah.
So what this article is saying is the Steelers gave you a fair offer. You chose to turn it down. You're going to be the franchise tag, $14 million or whatever he'll make this year. and you're going to have another year on the tires. You could get hurt. Maybe you should have taken that deal. But I do still say what they don't include in this article is the Steelers didn't guarantee as much money up front as the Rams did. And to me, that's a huge stumbling block in negotiations. If the Steelers would say, oh, we'll give you 30 guaranteed, maybe Bell would have taken that deal. So Bell's gambling a little bit on himself this next year. So we'll see if it works out for him. I hope it doesn't because that helped the Chiefs. Broncos would be okay with that too. Okay, speaking of the Chiefs, let's end with this. Patrick Mahomes hype. There's no question that there are Chiefs fans that are having fun with the hype, but it's certainly a hype across the country in some places as well. And there's fantasy football article on CBSSports.com saying, go get Patrick Mahomes. He's got the best offense in the NFL. Travis Kelce said last week the Chiefs offense has the potential to be unstoppable. Well, when you build things up, they usually crash and burn. It always scares me when there's this overabundance of confidence.
I know a guy that can stop the Chiefs offense.
Yeah.
The coach.
Yes. I was gonna say. Yes. I agree with that. Getting conservative big moments in big games. I agree with you on that. I still don't know if the Chiefs can stop anybody defensively. That's still a huge
concern.
Oh,
that's what I was talking about the other day.
But we can talk more about that as the season goes on. And we'll have Matthew Derrick on at ChiefsDigest.com to talk Chiefs football tomorrow. But I guess the question I have is Patrick Mahomes' hype. Of course it's going to be over the top when it comes to Kansas City because they haven't had a rookie – well, he's now a second-year player, but they haven't had a first-round draft pick with these expectations since 1983, 35 years ago, the same year the Pine Tar game was, when Todd Blackledge was a first-round pick of the Chiefs. So I totally get the overhype in Kansas City. I get it. It makes sense. And there's nothing wrong with being super excited. But there is a bit of a hype across the country about Patrick Mahomes from certain big-name people, analysts and people that follow the game. Do you think that the Mahomes hype, do you think it is over the top as a whole, not just Kansas City, I'm talking as a whole, or do you think it's legitimate?
For a guy that's only played one game in his career right now, I think any kind of hype that you're seeing nationally is over the top because you just don't know yet. Right. There's nothing you know about this guy, and especially from what you watched with him in college, you know that he's got the skill set to be an NFL quarterback like we've always talked about, but I just can't buy into all of it right now because I haven't seen him play in a legitimate
right
game. Even really the mattered. Game against Denver, it didn't really matter. You know, that's why he was playing.
Right.
If it mattered, he wouldn't have been playing. Alex Smith would have been the quarterback against Denver, too.
He also didn't have weapons.
Yeah. Exactly. So you haven't seen it yet. And so, yeah, I understand being excited. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited about the potential and what he could be and all of those things that come with it. But for it to go national and these guys to – I mean, there's people that think the Chiefs aren't even going to miss a beat at all because he's just going to step in and actually make them better than what they were with Alex Smith. And there's no answer for that yet. We don't know that yet. So –
Some people think that they're going to struggle. He's going to throw a lot of interceptions. They're going to go 6-10.
Yeah, yeah, but you just got to let these kind of things play out before you go all gung ho crazy about it. ESPN had an article saying that they're the most weapons in the NFL. They should have the best offense in the NFL this year.
They should.
Which on paper, they're right.
Right.
But I've also watched it with my own two eyes where they've had all these weapons and they don't use them the right way. Uh-huh. They've had all these weapons. They get out to an early lead and they just take their foot off the gas. It's cool to have weapons, but you got to keep using them.
Right. You got to let it fly. Yeah. That's what Andy Reid said the other day. We're going to let Mahomes let it fly. Why didn't you let Alex Smith let it fly?
Yeah.
In the playoff game. He'll change his mind. He can
exactly.
say all the right things.
Yeah.
He'll change his mind. He'll get in a tight game. And I'm telling you, the problem's not going to be Mahomes this year if the Chiefs struggle, in my opinion. The problem's going to be the defense.
Exactly.
I think the Chiefs can score a lot of points. And, yeah, they're going to turn the ball over more than they did last year because Mahomes is quarterback. But he's going to make more plays than Alex Smith made as well. I'm still worried about his health. He wasn't super durable at Texas Tech. I think he could have an issue with injuries in the NFL. He could be like a RG3 from that standpoint. I hope not.
Yeah.
But he could be. I think he's a smart kid. I think he can handle it mentally, but I believe Patrick Mahomes is going to be a really good quarterback in this league. I do believe that. And I can see the scenario where the Chiefs make the playoffs and he makes a few plays and they do win a playoff game, which if that happens this year, let's say they're in the wild card and they go to Pittsburgh and he pulls out a win. And then they lose the next round to the Patriots in the divisional round. The Chiefs fans are going to, everybody's going to go gaga for Cocoa Puffs because the Chiefs, well, the Chiefs just did that a few years ago. They won a wild card and then they lost the next round to the Patriots. And yeah, there was excitement coming in the next year. Can you imagine the expectations for this Chiefs team if Mahomes like makes some outstanding play or plays to win a playoff game and they go into next year, even though they won just one playoff game, going in next year, what the expectations will be for Mahomes and this Chiefs offense? Yeah. Can you imagine? So I think it's the scenario is there where he could be terrific. But I think if you're going to hedge your bet, he's going to be terrific at times. He's going to make some boneheaded plays at times. So then where does that put the Chiefs? Is that going to be good enough to be in the playoffs? Is that be good enough to win the division? Is that good enough to go 8-8? I will say this again. I think a lot of people are so caught up in Mahomes and how sexy this offense looks. And trust me, it looks really attractive. But you still got to play on the other side of the ball. And I am not convinced Bob Sutton is a good defensive coach. And the Chiefs said in the offseason, basically, the problem is not our coach, our defensive coordinator. The problem is our people, our players. So they blew it up for the most part. Their secondary is a lot different. Barry's back. No Marcus Peters. Tom Ballee, who didn't play much last year anyway. They got Dee Ford back. Can he stay healthy? Justin Houston never going to regain the form he once had. Derek Johnson is gone. Ron Parker is gone. I mean, they made some major changes on the defensive side of the ball. And now the proof's going to be in the pudding. Bob Sutton, if this defense is not considerably better this year than last year, then don't you think Bob Sutton's the problem?
Oh, yeah.
So once again, it could be the Chiefs' defense that holds this team back. So while everybody's talking about all this hype, Mahomes is going to do this, Mahomes is going to do that, you need the other side to help you a little bit. Because Mahomes in this offense, as great as it might be on paper, is not going to score 40 points a game. I'm going to go out on a limb. They're not going to average 40 a game. And they might average 30 a game, and that might not still be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And there are going to be times where they're going to score 31 points and probably lose 38-31. Because their defense just isn't all that. So I think some people may then hold that against Mahomes at the end of the year. Well, we didn't make the playoffs. Well, Mahomes isn't that great a quarterback. Actually, he had a rig. He threw for 25 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, threw for 4,000 yards. Pretty good for his first campaign as a starter. Yeah, but they didn't make the playoffs. Yeah, because he can't play defense. and that's the thing. I'm more worried. I don't know about you. I am less worried about Mahomes than I am about the defense.
Oh, right now, for sure.
I'm more confident in Mahomes to do the job than I am the Chiefs and Bob Sutton's defense to do the job. So I would rather spend time focusing on that and hoping that gets better than freaking out about Mahomes being the superstar quarterback. Now, if he turns out to be that, I'll be more than happy to enjoy that. And I think he could be that. But I think the hype, I agree with you, is a little bit over the top. I cut an excuse for the Kansas City people,
because they should
be rightfully overhyping and excited.
That's normal.
But
for the
nationally,
time
I think there's starting to be more and more people jumping on this wagon that Mahomes is this once-in-a-lifetime quarterback, and he very well might be. But we see many times when hype and expectations are built so high, do people usually meet those expectations? More often than not, they don't. LeBron James would be a pretty big example of the exception to that rule, but usually they don't. About every single McDonald's All-American that came to Kansas, almost, I'd say 90%, have not lived up to the expectations and hype because it's just too much. It's over the top. So you can answer that question yourselves at home. Patrick Mahomes, is that hype over the top or is it legitimate? I think we wait till the end of the year and we'll have a better answer for that question. 10:05 is our time, 70 degrees. Football! Training camp! Chiefs' first full practice is going to be on Friday in a couple days at St. Joe. If you've never been to training camp up there, or go to Denver's training camp if you want. It's okay to be a loser and go to Denver. I'm kidding. It's a joke. It's okay to wear orange and wear donkeys on your jersey, shirt, and whatever. It's okay. We're not going to hold that against you. It's cooler in Denver usually. You want to go out to Denver Bronco training camp like the Beisners did one year? We try not to hold that against their family. That's what you choose to do. That's what you choose to do. But I will say St. Joe's not as far away. So if you want to go to Chiefs training camp and watch the next superstar quarterback of this generation, then you go watch Chad Henne tear it up for the Kansas City Chiefs.